Yes, we have this one.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Greetings, Evergreens.
Greetings, Bob.
I'd like to do a whole different topic, this reading. So let's begin with locating James Joyce, if that's possible. Do you need his birth date?
Not necessary. Yes.
So James Joyce is there now?
Yes.
Is James Joyce aware of the Finnegan's Wake reading group that I'm a part of in New York City?
Participates.
Now, in a recent call by some famous Joyce scholar, I think it was Fritz Sen, to get input from however many Finnegan's Wake reading groups there were, he received 50 responses. Does James Joyce participate in all those 50?
Everyone.
So he can monitor all the Joycean disciples and interested people since he has been dead?
Yes.
The mind of a person on spirit plane can do that?
Yes.
So if a young person today at 15 discovers Finnegan's Wake and starts to sort of devotedly read it, Joyce begins to hover around that person?
Sometimes, not always. Has the option of doing it.
Does it depend on how involved the person gets with it?
No.
What determines his interest in those who are interested in his work?
Well, he's going to take it. You see, it can be Finnegan's Wake is read to be written to be read, not necessarily analyzed.
So those who start to analyze it, he becomes interested in?
Yes.
They become involved in it?
Yes.
Which, on a broad level, was the intention of the style of Finnegan's Wake, to create a very active interaction with the reader of it?
Yes.
Now, did he imagine that's what... Can I address Joyce directly and say you rather than he?
Yes.
So, Mr. Joyce, in 1922, when you had finished Ulysses, did you want, and you started to conceive of Finnegan's Wake, were you conceiving of a book that would be more participatory, the way Finnegan's Wake turned out? Or did that develop later?
It developed later.
At what point, year-wise, did that develop later?
More in the late 30s. Understand that the book was not received that well.
From 1926 to 1934?
Not received that well.
Oh, when it happened in 1939. Mm-hmm.
It was the book itself was not received well.
Were you disappointed? Or did you understand that?
He says he understood this, but also understood that there would be some that would be interested in this. That it is extended to the interest that it has is, to himself, enjoyable. To understanding what he wrote and how it is being analyzed, that also is interesting. The point here, he stresses, is that from the writing of Finnegan's Wake, Ulysses itself was not received well. Finnegan's Wake was beginning to... would have been accepted more if Ulysses had started off well, but Ulysses began to become more important as time came by. That the number of people that were caught within Ulysses and read Finnegan's Wake because it was by the author of Ulysses expected something that Finnegan's Wake was not. And some were disappointed with it. And Finnegan's Wake did not do well for a number of years until it began to be seen as unique within a collection rather than an extension of. You see?
Yeah, unique within a collection of his own work.
Yes. If you would continually make comparisons between Ulysses and Finnegan's Wake, the point is missed. That if Ulysses is, and while to a degree it influenced, it doesn't influence that much. It was the writer that influenced more than any, because the writer produced both. Now, point is, this happened in a reality, and the reality has shifted across the years, and there's more interest in Finnegan's Wake, that there would be more than 50 groups that would be interested in the analysis of this, is not that did he write for future generations, but that this generation understands what that generation was trying to say.
More so now.
More so now.
That leads to two points. First of all, you wanted to make Finnegan's Wake more participatory, and you thought of that in the, just a few years, like after 1935, before
yes.
the book was produced.
Yes.
So did you do a considerable amount of rewriting from 35 and 39 and reconceiving of what the book was about in that period?
The book wrote itself to a degree, but yes, there was considerable revision, he says. There was a revision because there would be a tendency for certain characters to not be able to interact at a certain point because of that which was said preceding. So there was much going back to revise so that he could get to the position where he would be able to get this character and that character interacting in the way that he wanted.
So
it was, he says, it's an interesting thought that it just flowed from his pen and not a comma was altered. That, no, it went through a number of revisions.
In other words, a number of interpretations by himself of what he was doing.
Yes.
Now, those changes were caused by events culturally, socially, politically in the world from 1925 to 1935.
Yes, and right? himself.
And his own self.
And his own self, and not only family life, but the way in which he was interacting with what was happening. Despair in the world, feelings of being led astray by politics, a reluctance on his part to see that those who were in charge had all the answers. These things, of course, flavored that which he wrote, and it is evident in the writings. The difference between the Ulysses and Finnegan's Wake, specifically these two, he says, one was written from where he was himself, which would be Ulysses, and he changed. World changed, he changed.
And when did that change happen, date-wise?
More in the mid-30s, as he was beginning to take a look at more to the culture, certain shifts in culture, certain reactions to shifts. Now, the question that was once asked of him, not by ourselves but others, was, if you were to write something these days, what would you write about? And he chuckled and said, science fiction about Africa.
About what year was that comment when he was asked that?
Mm. 89.
He was asked through a medium or within the spirit world?
Within the spirit world itself.
Now, that's 89. How does that relate back to Finnegan's Wake?
What are your views on Finnegan's Wake, he says.
He's asking me now?
Yes.
Well,
there's no prize for making it 25 words or less, but nonetheless, a simple, short description of Finnegan's Wake, from your perspective.
Well, I really enjoyed through, as I've got to know the book over the last 15 years more and more, I remember Marshall McLuhan writing to a science fiction magazine and saying that Finnegan's Wake was the ultimate science fiction novel,
yes,
science fiction book. That, to me, if you include Marshall's work as a kind of science fiction, sums up really what Finnegan's Wake was. It was a great science fiction novel.
Yes.
Would he agree with that description?
That's why he says that he would write trans fiction. You see, what does Finnegan's Wake tell you?
Well, members of my group are not aware of Marshall McLuhan's writings of Finnegan's Wake, but I'm greatly influenced by Marshall's interpretation of Finnegan's Wake, and I have talked to you, Joyce, and Marshall before about this, and we've discussed it. But I find Marshall's... my first reading with the Evergreens about Finnegan's Wake in 1980, the Evergreens said that Marshall's interpretation of the Ten Thunders and the basic outline of the effects of media that Marshall took interpreting Finnegan's Wake was accurate. So what did you just ask me? Because I was just going to answer it to you.
What is the book to you?
All right. So to me, it is about the effects of the evolution of culture and technology in the Western world, maybe the whole world, our history. But I've been updated recently by a reading talking to you, James Joyce, that you intend it more, it was the effects on the individuals and the reaction to other people's effects to new media. It wasn't as maybe general, but maybe it was general. So I'm oscillating between what Joyce has told me before, what Marshall has explained, and so I tend to agree that Marshall was the most useful interpretation of the meaning of Finnegan's Wake, and we have discussed what that is before. Would you agree with that?
Yes. But as he points out, it's all to the individual.
That's the participatory part.
Yes.
And that would be the other level. I'd say that I learned recently talking to you that Finnegan's Wake is a bottle and a catalyst for future creativity by individuals interacting with it.
Yes.
That's an important point for the book, isn't it?
It's important to realize that what parameters are set on observing a change is, can you observe a change from within a change? Can you observe the change that is happening about you, or do you do it by hindsight? How much foresight? But how much present sight? If you're going to look at present sight, most people do not see the changes that are happening around them. They are minimally incremental, and so therefore are not noticed, but the effect changes, but they oftentimes do not even observe the effect. Joyce sees present time as a very difficult period. Hindsight's easy. 2020 hindsight is even easier. Foresight is difficult. Present is the most difficult of it all.
was Joyce thinking that way in the 30s about change, and that's what some of the motives for doing Finnegan's Wake?
Yes. Also, his observation of the 30s was, from his perspective, can you not see where this leads? Can you not see that the environment is being created in which there will be further conflict, in which conflict is inevitable from the way that things are being created? That's foresight.
He was pessimistic of the effect of radio and new developments in the 30s.
What would it do?
Beg pardon?
What would it do? Realize, not so much pessimistic about radio, because the inevitability of the continuance of radio was virtually assured, because it had a commercial aspect to it. It did do, on a commercial basis, that which you were supposed to do, which was at a company level, radio was becoming a virtual necessity. But radio as a means of imparting information, could give the wrong information to a multitude. And as pointed out by others, the question is, can 50 million Frenchmen be wrong? The answer is obviously they can be. It depends on what the 50 million believe. And if you're going to have some of those that would want to manipulate the world through radio, then radio was the means by which it did have no self-censoring aspect in itself.
No media ecology, I would say. As an environment, do you mean self-censoring?
You see, if you're going to produce 100,000 brochures, then the cost of 100,000 is, let us suggest, X. If you're going to do 1 million, then it's X times 100,000. And you're limited to the physical cost of the paper, the physical availability of the paper, the physical availability of ink, the physical availability of a press, the competence of the person running it, etc., etc. So there are certain limiting factors on various media, but there is no limiting factor in radio. A cost of a transmitter, which could be borne by someone else, a microphone, a receiver, and anything could then go through that channel. Where's the limit to it?
So these are the things you were thinking about in the middle 30s?
Yes.
And this is what you wanted to communicate in Finnegan's Wake?
Yes.
Was it, did you, the present today is hard to figure out. Did you think the present in the 30s was hard to figure out?
The present time is always hard to figure out.
And is that a theme in Finnegan's Wake?
It's a theme. If you look for people trying to come to grips with a present, are they not?
Now, today they are not?
But in Finnegan's Wake, what are they trying to grasp? What are the characters trying to grasp?
In the Finnegan's Wake?
Yes. What are they trying to grasp?
Well, now we get into the interpretation by many scholars of Finnegan's Wake.
He says he would prefer yours.
All right. The characters are trying to grasp the very questions you've just outlined about the effect of new means of communication in the 30s.
But is it affecting them as a present time?
No, they're not aware they're trying to figure that out.
But it is affecting them, isn't it?
The information environment?
Yes.
Yes. And so...
But they couldn't see it.
But you were trying to show the citizens that inability to see.
Now you got it, he says.
So that is the broadest motive of doing Finnegan's Wake?
Yes.
And so Marshall McLuhan was the first to see that, I would say.
Yes.
So you would give him kudos as the best critic on that broad level.
At that broad level, yes. Because Marshall could see that this was an exemplification of the basic premise of science fiction, is what would happen if this continues? That's one of the basic premises within science fiction. And Finnegan's Wake proposes certain things. The ideas are there.
Did you think it was science fiction then?
Not at all.
But as science fiction developed after World War II, it's dealing with the same thing you were dealing with in the 30s, but it wasn't called science fiction?
He says, fortunately, it was not considered science fiction because science fiction went to a different segment of society. As much as they would have approved of Finnegan's Wake, he says that he was pleased that it was never categorized as science fiction.
And you were aware of science fiction in the 30s?
Oh, yes, indeed.
You didn't see the value in it per se, it was working out the problems that you were working out with Finnegan's Wake at that time.
Because science fiction was for children, it was considered. Science fiction was for children and those who were interested in modern futures, but That's not considered a thinking man's reading.
Right. Now, was Marshall given the advantage in perceiving the true larger mode of Finnegan's Wake because of his dialogues with Wyndham Lewis?
That considerably aided. Aided considerably. Because understand from where Marshall saw this, from the perspective that he saw, that the flow of a society is affected by the river in which it is. And if this river is slow and sluggish, and it will, an Army Corps of Engineer platoon can, and straighten that river so that it runs faster, the ecology of the river changes. So the ecology of information interested Marshall considerably. How did it, as Joyce pointed out, how does it, did it, will it affect the individual? What type of person does it create? What does it impinge with? What does it do? What does it become? So, of course, with conversations with Lewis, and his view was imperative. So he was extremely useful.
Did you know that Lewis had a good understanding of your work in the 20s and 30s, even though he dismissed Ulysses? Did Lewis come to this understanding later, or were you interested in Lewis's writings in the late 20s and early 30s?
Lewis knew, Lewis observed, and he said, and says, that Ulysses left him hungry. Finnegan's was a different meal, but it was more satisfying.
After it was published, or when it was published during transition? In transition.
In transition.
So Lewis seemed to... Would Joyce agree that Lewis seemed to have a unique avant-garde view of what Joyce was dealing with?
He could see what Joyce was dealing with.
But he and Joyce did not get to talk at that point.
No.
They were separated by life circumstances.
Yes.
Did Joyce know that Lewis could see the Wake whenever he read some of Lewis's writings in the 30s when Lewis and Joyce were not together?
He could see that he had made some influence because there's a shift of a point of view in Lewis's work, if you look carefully.
Right. So Lewis, he knew, he could tell by his writings that Lewis had a pretty unique insight into the real motives of Finnegan's Wake.
Yes.
Whereas pretty well nobody else on record did.
You see, what was Finnegan's Wake as a story, read as a story, read as a cultural necessity by certain people, that they would say they had read Ulysses, and that because they had read Ulysses and felt that it was culturally right to read Finnegan, why would they understand what it's for? They would read it as a story.
Like Ulysses.
Like Ulysses. And then, having read the book, put it aside. The majority of readers did this.
Even into the 50s? Into the 1950s?
Yes. Well, it's only been the interest in Finnegan's Wake because there is more to the story than was originally read. Realize that those that read this...
Like Joseph Campbell.
What did they read?
They thought Finnegan's Wake was a dream. And they thought it was a one-person HCE dreaming the history of the world and the history of Ireland and his hopes of for his sons. That was, would you agree, generally the basic interpretation of the Wake in the 40s?
From a story perspective, yes. Generally, that was it.
Actually, you would say limited to a literary view of the book.
Yes. His literariness was its its function. So it was believed by many.
They did not know it was a mirror of the new developments in media.
Because looking backward is easy. Looking present is the hardest. Looking future is hard.
And
therefore, the immediacy of the 40s, the immediacy of the 50s, did not fit in to the extent that Finnegan's Wake was in its predictiveness. There was an interest in the 40s and the 50s as to what the future is going to be after a war, and etc. But realize, everyone looked forward to a bonny future. It was a future of no conflict. It was a future of no stress. Everything would be solved.
After World War II?
Everything would be solved. In the last of the great wars, pray to God. The point is, if you take a look at science fiction in the 30s, predominantly 40s somewhat, you find that it's beautiful future. It's a marvelous future where robots do all the work for you. They make your beds for you. One predicted that in 1990 robots would do your cooking for you. Robots, you see, that understand an important aspect here. If you predict the future from the necessities of the present, you do not understand the necessities of the future. That you would have, let us suggest, because of your robot chef, and your meals, instead of taking you 3 hours to create, would only take 15 minutes supervision time. So look at all the time that you've saved. Well, now that did not take the microwave into consideration. Now, a microwave meal is 15 minutes. It's as if you have the effect of a robot chef, but there is no robot chef. But from the descriptiveness, the milieu of the 30s, this is what the 90s would be. The solutions of the problems of the 30s. The greatest error made in science fiction is extending that. That's why certain of the science fiction that was written in the 30s and the 40s, about the 1980s and the 1990s, is so quaint. So quaint.
But your book, Finnegan's Wake, was dealing with the violence and the disservices that were coming from these new scientific technologies, especially communication media. And you were an avant-garde science fiction writer from that perspective, because you were predicting the problems.
Marshall understood that the media of its means affects the observer of that media. That the media is the message, because the message perceived by the observer is affected by the media in which it is transmitted. Now, that essential argument in Joyce's work says, yes, that it does, though this is far before Marshall, but nonetheless, what does it impinge with? What old anonymities, what belief structures, how does it alter the world? Possibly Village A has decided that it hates the people in Village B and has no contact with them. None. Not of any. No trade, no commerce. But the radio links them. Then what?
Now, when you started Finnegan's Wake in 1922-24... you were not wrestling with the value of literacy in the new world of the 20s and early 30s of new communications. When you began Finnings Wake, you were not thinking that way? Were you wrestling with those problems that you just outlined then?
Yes, wrestling with them. Begin to... You see... The world was making rapid changes. And where would Ireland be in this?
You were concerned about Ireland?
Yes. The division of Ireland, this is what Joyce says now, is a microcosm of what was discussed in the first session, because he observed it. He observed this first session.
What was the first session of what?
This day. It was done just immediately prior to this session.
Oh, the previous reading.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a microcosm. What caused it? He asks you to think of it.
What caused what?
The division of Ireland.
Well, the British did.
Did they?
You mean now in the 20th century, the division is caused... You mean after 1922 when they got their independence, the southern part? Or are you referring to the violence in Ireland today?
All of it. What created it?
Well, being a McLuhanite, I would explain it in McLuhan terms.
Then do so.
Because that's what you were doing. With Finnegan's Wake?
Yes.
You saw that De Valera, when he became Prime Minister in 1922 and was using radio to publicize, that this was going to have strange effects on the culture of Ireland.
Now you got it.
And that's basically what you wrestled with in Finnegan's Wake.
Exactly.
So Finn does refer to the Irish tribal heritage becoming retrieved by radio. It's been awakened by radio and the new modern technologies. And then the content of Finnegan's Wake is all these previous historical battles brought back and confused within this new world of the 20th century for Ireland. Would you agree with that statement?
Very much so. He applauds on that. Well, here's the point, is that if you're going to talk about Ireland's history, you're going to set up a set of beliefs about who you are as Irish. This is the history of me, this is the history of my people, and this is why I live the way that I do, and this is why I think the way that I do. Now,
that's the given, isn't it?
That's the given.
Yeah.
Now, where this is able to evolve without radio, it's insular. But you can take radio and then you can start teaching people all this, and then becomes a homogeny of not correct. Then 50,000 Irishmen can be wrong.
And you saw that problem in the 20s?
Yes.
Were you alone? Could you discuss that with anybody?
Yes, there was some.
In your immediate circle?
In the immediate circle.
Can you name a couple?
No. It was very much a solitary book.
What's the closest friend who understood a bit of that was Frank Budgen, would you say?
Frank was skeptical.
Did you tell him some of the things we've just discussed as some of your motives?
Yes.
But he didn't understand it either.
No one understood it. It wasn't until Marshall began to... say certain things about media that Joyce realized there was the affinity between himself and Marshall.
So did you start to sort of monitor Marshall's development in the late 40s, early 50s when he started to do this?
Somewhat, not much. It was more that when Marshall points out that Finnegan's Wake is science fiction, what he's pointing out is that Finnegan's Wake in its greater context, is prophetic. If you take the prophetic aspect of it, you see Bosnia. You see?
Yes. And is that why Finney is what is with the younger generations today, the students of the 80s and early 90s, can see some of that implication, prophecy in Finnegan's Wake, and therefore are more interested in it.
It's because with Finnegan's Wake, you can see the past from a different perspective and have a different hindsight on it, which makes more sense than certain histories that are taught. When you see that the changes in society are due to the communications within a society, are not specifically by this contract made or that contract made or this person giving that rousing speech at that particular time. As one else person who was also in this group says, when Churchill gave his speech, "We will fight on the beaches, we will never surrender," it was not sent by letter, it was sent by radio. And the resolve of a country was affected by radio at that particular time. But it was not only the speech, it was the means by which it was transmitted. You see?
Yes, now, you say the Finnegan's Wake, in retrospect, gives us this hindsight. You were not clear that your book would produce that effect in the 20s and 30s when you were writing it.
No, because what Joyce says is that he was trying to get a grasp of presentness, which is the hardest thing for people to grasp, which is the change which is happening to them at present.
On both your own particular body and sensory level, as well as collective, or more
both.
Collective?
Both. Both.
All right, so with that in mind, let me ask some traditional Finnegan's Wake questions, and I'm interested in your answers, and my group would be interested in your answers. First
yes.
question, is Finnegan's Wake a dream, or about a dream?
No.
So therefore there's not a dreamer?
No.
So the dream metaphor, interpretation of the wake, is irrelevant from your point of view?
Totally.
Now, you know that many people in the James Joyce Quarterly Stable, those who are experts from Fritz Sen to Bob Spoo, the people who run the James Joyce Quarterly, don't treat the Finnegan's Wake that they regard it as a dream and work with those ideas, don't they?
Because it's useful as a device to see it as a dream. If the device of seeing it as a dream makes analysis of it from a particular perspective more easily, then seeing it as a dream is a valuable device. But it is not written as a device. The dream is not there within it. The juxtaposition may be not to the linearity that they themselves would wish it would be, and would be more analogous to a dream, but as a device of exegesis, left to their usefulness, but to the actuality as it was writing, no. To see it as a dream is also to miss certain points of its relevancy as to a present.
Right.
And if you're to miss the relevancy of a present, you're missing certain of the aspects of the book which was designed to be read as. That if you read Finnegan's Wake when it was produced, the objective of that was for you to examine the presentness of change in circumstance, which is the hardest aspect to observe. If you were to read this in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and that it does the same as it is for a certain number of new readers, enabling them to see their presentness and observe their presentness by observing the book as a statement of people not seeing their presentness, and from that learning presentness, then it's useful to see it as such and use it as an instrument as such. But to put it in the context of dream, what for? To make the simplicity of analysis? What if it's not a dream? Would the analysis then change? Of course it would. So therefore, if the analysis must go from the aspect of dream, then you're going to get a particular analysis, aren't you?
Yes. Now, you grant on the symbolist attitude that the reader participates in making meaning, that if one wants to look at it as a dream and use it that way and stimulate their creative thinking about dreams, that's okay as far as you're concerned.
But it's still really a different analysis.
It's the reader's interpretation.
Exactly.
But your motive in making the book is a whole different agenda.
The motive is to show those in transition do not see that they're in transition. They do not see what is happening to themselves, do they?
Yeah, Marshall uses the phrase stages of apprehension.
Stages of apprehension, a very useful phrase. But if you see it from the aspect that hindsight is very, very easy. The future, if this happens, then this. It may be the other. There are variables to the future. But what is happening in the person at the present? It's the hardest to observe, because it's very difficult to see change when you're in the midst of it.
That's like, the metaphor is, it's very hard to be aware of sleep when you're sleeping. So you could say that the Finnegan's Wake is about the collective sleep of people not perceiving the nature of the present.
From that aspect, then it is a dream, isn't it?
Yes.
But what if it isn't?
Yes.
Can we pause 1 second, please? Please continue.
Many things you're not privy to. You're not privy to the decisions that are being made by various cabinets and various parliaments. You're not knowing of them. They affect your future. Because these decisions made by men and women in other places affect where you are. Because of the not only the decisions, but the means by which they will be then sent as to affect a great number of people in a considerable way. The news is watched by a considerable number of people. But the point stressed is that it is not that the present is a dream. It's just that it's almost impossible for most people to observe what is actually happening to themselves this very moment that they themselves exist.
All right, now,
you see, you are listening to us talk. While that is happening, various correlations, various thoughts, various knowledges within yourself are being accessed, used, applied, altered, maintained, shifted.
As I think now, you mean?
Yes, as you think now.
In response to you?
In response. So you are changing as we speak because of the information that you're getting.
Yes.
So therefore, until we said those words about the thoughts, you were not cognizant of yourself changing. But on reflection, you will see that you have changed. And that the past, as an observance, is relatively easy. What you would do tomorrow based on what you have with yourself is somewhat easy, but there are so many choices. Which one will you take? Can you choose to the benefit and all? But now, how do you observe now? Through the senses, taste, touch. Will they affect you? A touch of hunger? A touch of sight? You see?
Yeah, you're analyzing me right now, my body.
Yes.
You can get inside my body.
But you see, that's an observance from a different perspective. But you exist in the perspective you are now, and observing the changes in yourself as they happen are rare, rare indeed.
Yeah, you mean what I'm being put through in this conversation, I'm awake, I'm being conscious of what I'm going through in the present. You're saying generally people in life can't do that. It's a rare experience to do that.
A rare experience to even think about change as it happens. Now, an aspirin. You take the aspirin, you feel better. That's being able to perceive at a certain physical level that change is happening, i.e. the headache stops, or the pain is less. That's directly observable. But all of the other changes that are happening in yourself, beyond the physiological, are not easily determined.
You mean my emotions and mind?
Mind? What's going on in your mind? As we talk, your mind is shifting.
Yes.
But because you're concentrating on the content, you're not seeing the process of it. Now, if you look at Finnegan's Wake, look at the processes that are happening to people around them. What are they doing with the content of it? What's history? What's history that an easily observable past?
So that's how Finnegan's Wake is a daily diary by you when you were writing it, about trying to become aware of the present circumstances you and society in Ireland were dealing with.
Yes.
And so it's a diary.
It's a diary. But to see it as a dream, it's a useful analytical tool, but not relevant, unless you want to reach a particular perspective preordained that it is a dream. So if it is a dream, then it must be done by a dreamer. So who's the dreamer? What if it's not a dream? Then there's no dreamer and there's no identification necessary.
Right. So that John Bishop's book, The Book of the Dark, wrestling with whether it's a dream, dealing with the physiology of sleep, misses the point of Finnegan's Wake by emphasizing too much the unconscious condition of sleep.
Mm. The unconscious condition of change. It's, as we say, useful literary device to see it as a dream.
Yes.
And your point is that people are asleep, that they are not observing because they are asleep. But the point is that where there is a lack of observation of present is because present is very, very difficult to ascertain.
All right, now when...
Especially change in present.
Which is the characteristic of the 20th century. It has more change than any previous centuries going on. It's the viability of vicinals, if invisible, are invincible.
Yes.
That's a key sentence on page 81 of Finnegan's Wake.
Yes.
Are there several other sentences where you felt you were giving away the description of the book that you've just laid out?
Well, they've scattered through the book. Take a look. You'll find them easy. Once you know the basic premise, the present is extremely difficult to perceive. Well, you perceive the present through your senses, but what that's doing to you, that's not observable.
Yeah, both... both on your body and within your society.
Within your mind, and how your mind then affects the society. Because your mind is going to be used to, you're going to take this information that you've got in this session, you're going to play this section to that group, and that group is going to discuss it as to its possibilities or improbabilities or whatever. And it alters them, does it not? Through the medium of a recording.
It alters them no matter what.
No matter what. It will make an effect. They will say, this session is absolutely nothing. This is, first of all, itself, impossible. Some may say that. Some may say, but this is Joyce from another perspective, and not Joyce in his earthly perspective.
Right.
And they could say that then there's been different analyses, etc., etc. But nonetheless, the medium of a recording, no matter how they perceive it, does alter them. So does radio. Now, if this recording were on radio, how many people would it affect?
Depends, doesn't it?
Depends upon if they're members of the Joycean Society or not. The data suggests that this tape goes to all 50 of those, 52, of those Joycean societies. Then what? You've altered the entire aspect of Joyce's analysis.
We could begin a new form of scholarship on Joyce with this.
Additional.
There would be resistance to it.
Of course.
But I think you're saying it would change people anyways.
Of course it would. Even if they were to deny it, it changes. Do you realize that in a society where there is no aspect of something, there is no denial or acceptance because there is not the knowledge of the aspect? As soon as the aspect is introduced to the society, then there will be some that will say yes and some that will say no.
That's inevitable.
Inevitable.
Is that illustrated in Finnegan's Wake, the Seven Sean division?
Well, look at it shifts and look at it changes and look how it divides.
It's an archetype.
Yes. Look how Ireland itself is divided. By what? A different race of people? From a different planet? From a different genre? These are Irish, born, bred, lived, loved, laughed, if you will put all those together, and have done this for generation upon generation upon generation on Irish soil. What's the difference between the person from this inch of the country and a person of that inch of the country? But the beliefs that are held within each individual that divides them. And the divisions are kept up by a media that is itself promulgating the concepts of this inch or that inch.
I'm now seeing that you almost would like this tape to be played to give the Irish perspective on the troubles in their country.
Can be. Your choice.
Was that part of your motive, though, to do that?
It's always open.
For that possibility?
Yes.
You saw that I was preparing for this dialogue with you, and you saw when I brought it up with the group, I think it was last Wednesday?
Yes.
You were there and watched the reaction?
Yes.
You noticed that some were not interested, but some were interested and did have questions.
You see, let us go back to one particular thing. Let us not upset the apple cart. Let's have a Joycean society where Finnegan's Wake is a dream by a dreamer, and that its incoherency is because of a dream. Let us stay there. Let's not alter it. Let's not think about it. Let us make sure that anyone else who studies it gets marked on that aspect and that particular approach. And if they agree with it, then we'll give them 100%, and if they do not, we'll give them a failing grade. It's so easy when that's done. But change, when you're in it, is not observable at the mental level. People do not see change. They do not realize the reverberances of change. Not when you're in it. When you're out of it, yes. When you go out and see other people changing, it's so easy to say to them, look at what's happening to you, you're changing, this is shifting you, this is changing you. And not so easy for oneself, is it?
Right, but I find in our group when we do discuss the book in our group over a 2 or 3 hour period that I become aware of the process of interpretation, the changes that are evoked as a group discusses, and I always think that is the use of Finnegan's Wake as a catalyst for people to look at change, even in talking about it, change in how you react to other people's interpretations. It's a model for change in a small group, which can be magnified as a model for change in society in general.
Interesting, isn't it?
And you intended it to be that way?
It was intended to show that people do not observe change.
That's the main point.
That's the main point. They're caught in it. They're swept by it. They do not know where it takes them, because the banks of the river move, but they are constant within the flow. And they would say that nothing is changing, but it is.
And that's the meaning why you chose the word river run as the first word.
You see it?
Yes. And all meanings flow from your interpretation you've just presented of the word river run there.
If you're in the river, the water isn't moving, the banks are moving. You're safe.
That's Einsteinian. Were you interested, were you influenced in working on this, even though it was a solitary effort? Did you think other artists like Kurt Schwitters, Duchamp, the Dadaists, Max Ernst, were exploring these situations too? this sort of problem or effort?
They were trying to solve it, but they were trying to solve it not realizing that they were in a process of change. But if you look at the dentist, you'll see that they are commenting about the river banks passing, but realizing it's a continually new view, but they could not understand it.
So you were confident in that you had figured out a way to kind of present it in book form?
Yes.
I mean, it took you a while, and the revision you did in the late 30s was the organizing of the contents more appropriately based on an understanding you already had for 10 years of what the book was about.
Yes.
I see.
And they must end within 1 minute, because there is shortage of time.
I've been reading Donald Theall's articles on your Finnegan's Wake the last few days, and he was the secretary of Marshall, greatly influenced by Marshall, and I felt he encapsulated Marshall's work very well in his essays. And I didn't know whether you would agree that Marshall was the best interpreter at this point, or in the 50s and 60s. But assuming that, I found Theall's articles very relevant.
Yes.
Would you like to commend Theall's articles as an update of that?
Yes, because he sees it. You see how he sees it. Well, that's what makes it relevant.
Does he see it clearer than Marshall did, or did basically he understands what Marshall saw?
He understood what Marshall saw, and he's, of course, because he has the opportunity that is created by hindsight, is able to also make certain updatings, derivations, yes. But still, the problem is that being in change is difficult, very difficult. Now, societies do change, to accept change. In fact, come to the point where they would expect change. Look at Finnegan's Wake for those who expect change. And now this must end.
Thank you, Evergreens.
Thank you very much, Mr. Joyce.
And now, unless there's any further comment, shall we end the session?
Please.
Thank you. Dear Lord, please enfold these entities in thy love and thy perfection. Amen. Please clear any negative influences from these entities now.
Done.
Allow the body to become completely relaxed. Perform any healing which may need to be performed. Begin increasing the blood pressure to normal, naturally. Begin returning all other systems of the body to normal, naturally now.
Done.
And thank you for our sessions.
We do thank you. To you both, God's blessing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now I would like Michael to awaken, feeling completely refreshed, relaxed, and loved now.
This is
came out of that session, something that really fascinated me. James Joyce was standing next to a guy on a computer. And the guy who was sitting on the computer had the word processor up and was writing. And Joyce said to me, may seem like a trivial point, but he would write a different novel if he were doing this on an older mechanism, such as a typewriter. And different if he were doing it by hand. He said, I want to point out what seems to be an almost triviality, but is not. He's writing on this word processor, which has a blue screen with yellow letters, and the highlights are in red. In other words, the underlined italics are in red. Now, because of his sensory input, he doesn't want too much red on that screen. So therefore, he doesn't italicize many things. So rather than italicize, he would alter the sentence structure and add an exclamation point. Because physiologically, he doesn't want that much red on the screen. Now.
And that's not conscious.
It's not conscious. Oh, it's totally, totally subconscious. Totally subconscious. Now, does that mean that the screen should be in black and white? Joyce says no. Because if it was black and white, it would be a different novel he would write.
And a different subconscious problem.
A different subconscious, yeah. He said, that's a subconscious. He said, so I asked, could you have written Finnegan's Wake on a computer? And he said, oh, easily, no problem, I could have written. It would have been a different novel, but I could have easily written Finnegan's Wake, and I think it would have been a different novel.
He would have dealt with the same issues, mm-hmm. but they would come out differently.
They'd come out differently, because he, in his own subconscious, would arrange it differently, because he wouldn't want that much red on the screen if he was that way keyed into red on the screen. Now, the thing about it is that Finnegan's Wake was done on a typewriter. Now
he wrote a lot of it with his hand.
With his hand, yeah, but it had to eventually go on to a typewriter. Right. It had to be then transcribed to then. He wrote, and when it was on a typewriter, it was different than when it was on the writing.
Was he aware of that?
Well, he was aware of the fact of how much time it took to type. And if you make changes, one change on a sheet of paper, it had to be then retyped.
But well, that's a lot of time.
That took up time. But it's acceptable to send a manuscript for printing with errors corrected. It doesn't have to be perfect like a business letter. But so there's the effect of that. What's that? What's in that? And I was seeing that very familiar picture of people huddled around a radio listening to the news coming from the War Office and Churchill and all the news about the war and how it was going. We're winning, we're losing, we're winning, all that sort of thing. Propaganda is inflation of the number of this, the diminution of that. Vietnam, it was a glorious success until it failed. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
The fact that they did not allow reporters to have access on the field in this Iraq coalition war. They kept the reporters out as far as they could, and then only afterwards allowed them in, but a lot of that stuff was no longer available.
You were thinking that in
the session, coming out of it also.
And Joyce was watching that with
He was watching that with me, too, and he was saying, this is interesting. Wasn't Joyce that pointed it out? This was Marshall pointed this out. In this session also.
Did you see Marshall?
Yeah, I saw Marshall there. Yeah,
was Wyndham Lewis there?
I didn't know Lewis.
Yeah.
No, but Marshall was there saying, did you notice that every one of the bombs hit accurately where they were supposed to hit? And I said, yes. And he said, why? Because the only pictures they showed you were the bombs that actually hit. And he said, the iron bombs they dropped, you never saw pictures of those, but man, did you see the technology. And I said, yeah, when I look at that, all the bombs hit accurately. And he said, yeah. He said, how managed were you? And I said, well, I guess it must be managed to what they would show me. He says, nah, now you see why people don't want a 500, leaders necessarily, or some groups don't want a 500-channel universe. Because then, to fill up that, they're going to start investigating, and the whole investigative process changes.
Everybody becomes a Woodward and Bernstein.
Yeah, and there was that.
And that resonates with the previous session about this whole thing.
The whole thing, yeah.
About, you know, the controlling of new technologies.
And the other one was, Joyce said to me personally, you haven't read Finnegan's Wake. And I said, no, I haven't. And he said, I would read it first before reading Ulysses, which I have not read either. Sorry, I'm sending my lack of literary talent here. He says, read that first, then read Ulysses. It makes a little more sense. He said, I didn't realize what I was... When I was writing Ulysses, I had a particular point, what I wanted to do, make up, and etc. He says, but only when I'd finished Finnegan's Wake was I able to look back at Ulysses and see what I'd actually written.
Do you remember what was the Ulysses about? Can you say?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But he
don't
felt
know.
It was clearer what he did.
Clearer about he read. He said that he reread Ulysses from the perspective of having finished Finnegan Wake, and he realized what he'd written to a greater extent. He said, "Oh, I can see some threads, but no, it's not a continuance. I can, you know, that." Saw that, and I saw him quite. Interestingly, just not upset or anything, just saying if you want to see it as a dream, then go ahead. You will reach a conclusion which is not necessarily what the writer... But if it makes sense to you to do it that way, eventually somebody will say it's not a dream. and they'll see it from another perspective, and they'll say, oh, the book makes a different sense if it's not a dream. Maybe these are actual feelings realized and realizable, not just the meanderings of a mind in a particular stage of consciousness.
Like Thiel's idea, it's a machine talking, yeah. Things like that.
Yeah.
He says he's quite tolerant of Thiel's interpretation.
Yeah. Oh, he's very extremely tolerant.
But they have nothing to do with him.
No.
With what he intended.
No. He says if you want to see it as a literary device to explain it, he says, but where in the book does it say it's a dream? Where in the book does it say that there's a dreamer? He said, it doesn't actually say these things. You would perceive them from the perspective of that, because it's more easily to define the book if you say that there was a dream and a dreamer.
But he did say, the statement I quoted, the viability of visibles if invisible are invincible. He said, those are statements he made.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you what the book's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he says there are several of those statements.
And the other one was the thing about, and this is true, and my Lord, I've never thought it from this perspective. It seems like the present is a very thin line, and the past stretches backwards, and the future probabilities stretch forward, and that now, the moment now, is just a little moment of time. You know, it's this time and a few minutes after that, and we live in this moment. You see? But observing change is so interesting because I got to do it this from a personal aspect, and this is personal. I fell in love with Ellie, and then I became in love with Ellie, which is a different thing. Because what I did by falling in love and then having her with me, I was able to develop things in myself that 10 years later, I now notice. But while I was going through them, I didn't. Did not.
And it took you 2 or 3 years before you got married, made it official.
Yeah.
That's when you get into the second phase.
You get into the phase. Yeah. But what makes it fascinating to me is, looking back, I've changed.
Yeah.
I've changed much in personally.
She has changed you.
Absolutely. And I changed myself.
And you have changed her.
And I've changed her. But the point is, we were not, at the time, noticing the changes.
Right.
It's only when we look back on it, we say, oh, well, that's interesting.
And Joyce is interested in this. The nature of the present, how invisible and unnoble it is.
Yeah.
He's trying to make it noble, but he knows it's so hard to do.
Yeah.
And were you going to say that the now, I would say, you might have realized the now is the bigger now.
Yes.
It includes the past and the future more than we realize.
More than we realize, yeah. And that's it.
What amazes me is how much this relates to the previous reading. The difficulty of the present was the conversation Ellie and I had between the two readings about we wanted to know more, and it was getting really good in the first reading. Well, how are we going to go to the energy chip society?
Yeah.
We can't really conceive. And he says, well, kind of like barter. And I said, no, it's not like barter. It's something entirely we haven't conceived of. Now, it's hard to sit here now and say, this is where we're going, and here's what it's going to look like and feel like, because you just said it, Evergreen's just an energy chip. Or whatever, and it's like I can't conceive of going to the store and getting a bag of tomatoes and not paying for them.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how that's going to work unless they just gave it to me and I do something intangible to repay it to someone.
But Ellie, you know, that's what he was Joyce was talking about. The Evergreens gave us the present. You know, it's just a few years down the road, but it presented an oncoming present implied by fusion energy.
Right.
And we were trying to see the implications of that.
Yeah,
and it was very hard to see the implications, to see
really
the transitions.
See. Yeah.
That's exactly what Joyce was talking about.
We were thinking of asking the Evergreens, what does it look like?
How do we make this step-by-step transition?
Yeah, how do, well,
no, we don't.
We don't
make a step-by-step. All of a sudden,
it's not a formula that they give you and then you do it.
Yeah.
It's more like, it was like saying, jump into the future and tell us what it's like in this society.
Yeah, a little more details.
Yeah, about this...
I think what the Evergreen said in the first session was basically that when you have a society that's relatively consistent and trying to stay stable, it suddenly collapses if it's invaded. It's the sudden collapse of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union did not collapse across a number of years. It suddenly went bang.
Right.
The causes were going across a number of years, but it went clang like that. And there was a sudden change. What happened in 1 year would have taken a century, a number of centuries ago. But
And Joyce said that's what he meant, that Ireland was a microcosm of the changes of the 90s that we were talking about the first session. And he was saying that radio came into Ireland in 1922 in that period, and he was looking at this incredible, like for us, fusion energy that was causing confusion in Ireland.
And it's changed Ireland forever. The way that Ireland is right now is not going to remain fixed forever. But the radio created it, and Joyce saw that. But my thing is that when fusion comes in, it changes within a year, everything changes.
It's another major revolution.
Another major revolution.
Bigger than the Soviet Union. It's going to be another mind-blowing new zone we go into. You know what I mean?
A new reality. A total new reality.
And that's what Joyce was dealing with, wasn't it?
I mean, could we envision a machine that requires no power connection? I mean, a tractor that has a fusion generator built in. And that tractor, the life of the tractor, an average tractor would last a good 30 years. Good 30 years.
With repair
and maintenance, regular maintenance. And the power cell is good for its life.
We'll be able to remove telephone wires and plug systems, maybe, in a lot of ways. Well, maybe not everything.
I was thinking about the when they talked about the high friction at the generator end.
Yeah.
You know, like we reduce friction at the light bulb end, but the... but the source has still got a lot of high friction. Well, I was thinking, gosh, wouldn't it be interesting if you could transmit that power without the line?
Well, the thing about it is you don't need to. The whole concept of power transmission is going out the window because you can take the power wherever you want.
We're not going to have telephone lines in that sense.
Why would you need telephone lines?
Yeah, that's all going to disappear.
Right now, China... didn't go through the telephone extension that they wanted to. They were thinking, they had plans to put up these huge transmission line systems for telephone and, you know, how much it was going to cost, etc. Well, it was going to cost them, you know, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to put in telephone systems.
Then the cellular came in.
The cellular came in, wiped it all out. In fact, Hong Kong is right now in the process of getting rid of as much of its telephone system as it can because it wants to be all cellular because they don't want all the wires all over the place. And they're saying, okay, that's it. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens if we have cellular television? I mean, cellular cable. I mean, right now we have...
Wristwatch cable.
Yeah. Right. But what about having... Right now, I have a cable coming into my house, physically have a cable, because that's the only way they can transmit 50 television programs to me on my television, is by having that cable. But what if I don't have a cable, that it's all transmitted? I mean, they don't have to dig ditches, they don't have to make power... fiber optics throughout the entire thing entirely. What if we shift it into another area of fiber optics? Because, I mean, it changes. But we don't see it when we're in it. I can understand Joyce totally on that. I can understand completely on that.
I can see how he could make that the metaphor of the mystery of consciousness, and almost a mystical mystery of the present, and trying to grasp it. He could make that a metaphor for all the sociological changes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.